Our elders are going to be speaking to us a little bit later, talking to us about the year that has gone by and the year that we look forward to and the plans ahead. So my part this morning is going to be briefer than usual. But I hope you'll pay attention to a few things from God's Word for just a couple of minutes. You know probably about the remarkable career of King David. But do you know about the men who fought alongside David in all of those military conquests against the Philistines and against the other enemies of Israel as he was solidifying and securing the promised land? The Bible lists many of their names in passages like 2 Samuel chapter 23. Some of them were with David from his earliest days as a fugitive from Saul. Others, no doubt, came along later as he was established as king, first in Hebron and then in Jerusalem. I want to tell you about some of those men. In 2 Samuel 23, we read about some of them. Three of David's warriors in particular gained the greatest distinction and became known simply as the Three. First among them was a man named Yashobeam the Hechmonite, whose spear had slain hundreds of men in a single encounter. And then there was Eleazar the Ahohite. In battle against the Philistines, this man had fought tirelessly when the rest of Israel had retreated. Third was Shammah the Hararite. Shammah, on one occasion when others had fled the battle, took his stand in a bean field and stood down an approaching column of enemy soldiers. And these three men joined others as part of a larger elite group that was known as the 30, although eventually their number came to be more than that. Their names are also mentioned in 2 Samuel chapter 23. The names of their hometowns and their clans reveal that these men came from many different parts of Israel. Some were even foreigners. The commander of the 30 was David's nephew, Abishai, who not only showed considerable skill in battle, but on one particular occasion actually saved David's life. We read about that just a couple of chapters earlier in chapter 21. The battle was heavy, David was tired, and this great big bear of a man had David in his sights and was intending to kill him, and Abishai came to his defense and helped strike the man down and save David's life. Another outstanding warrior in this group was Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, who killed some of the most impressive fighters of Moab and Egypt. He ended up becoming captain of David's personal bodyguard. David's nephew Asahel is also numbered among the 30, even though he died in battle quite early during David's exploits. He was a heroic soldier. And also listed in this group is a man named Uriah the Hittite, who most of us know from one of the lowest points in David's life when David stooped to committing adultery with Uriah's wife. Uriah was one of his most loyal and outstanding soldiers. And there are other men who receive honorable mention. 2 Samuel chapter 21 tells names like Sibbecai the Hushathite, Elhanan of Bethlehem, and even David's own nephew named Jonathan, all of whom defeated giants of the same race as Goliath, whom David had defeated as a young man. And in 1 Chronicles 12, we read about many others who came to join David in battle, including expert marksmen from the tribe of Benjamin, men who would have risked a great deal by siding with David against their kinsman Saul. We read about highly skilled soldiers from the tribe of Gad joining David. Many of their names are listed. We even read about more than 4,000 men joining David from the tribe of Levi. And besides all these, thousands of other unnamed warriors from all over Israel who flocked to David's banner. And so in 1 Chronicles chapter 12 and verse 22, the text says, from day to day, men came to David to help him until there was a great army, like an army of God. And as I think about all those men, named or unnamed, I'm reminded of something. God blessed David with remarkable military and political success. David captured the city of Jerusalem in order to make it the capital of Israel. He subjugated the surrounding hostile peoples. He expanded and secured Israel's borders. And David didn't do any of those things by himself. He was surrounded with men who were skillful, valiant, and loyal. And David would not have survived, the Bible makes clear, much less had the success that he did without their help. The Lord used the faithful service of these men in fulfilling His promise to establish David's kingdom. David did not fight alone. And neither do you, and neither do I. Do you ever think, Christian, about the fact that we are at war? Because we are. The Bible says so. Look at how Paul describes it in Ephesians chapter 6. In Ephesians 6 and verse 12, Paul says that our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the powers, against the world forces of this darkness, against the spiritual forces of wickedness in the heavenly places. Our war is not fought with swords or spears or with guns and bombs, but it is no less real. Paul describes it this way in the 2 Corinthian letter in chapter 10. He says in 2 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 3, "Though we walk in the flesh, we do not war according to the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not of the flesh, but divinely powerful for the destruction of strongholds. We are destroying speculations and every lofty thing raised up against the knowledge of God, and taking every thought captive to the obedience of Christ." That's the kind of warfare we're engaged in. But it's serious business. And although it is spiritual warfare, God has not left us to fight it alone. He is supporting us with the strength of His power, just like He did the people of Israel. I'm amazed at the number of times in Exodus and Deuteronomy when God was preparing the people to take the land of Canaan, preparing them to cross over and possess that land, especially in Deuteronomy, preparing them for war. Over and over He would say, "I will fight for you." And in Joshua, we read the same thing. "The Lord will fight for you," Joshua said. It's not that the people had no part to play, but they needed to understand that really it was God who was waging these battles. They were merely instruments in His hand. And because God was waging the battle, they could be guaranteed success. Even Nehemiah, in chapter 4 of his book, as he was going about the task of directing the rebuilding of the walls of Jerusalem after years of Babylonian captivity and after those walls had lain in ruins for years, and there was all kinds of opposition from the people who were living in the land surrounding them at that time, Nehemiah said, chapter 4 and verse 14, "God will fight for us." And the same promise is extended to us. One of the ways God does that is by surrounding us, just like He did David, with brothers and sisters who are waging the same war that we are. Right now, there are thousands of other Christians who are fighting the same fight that you are, all over the world. Some of those saints make up this local congregation or the local congregation of which you are a part back home if you've visited us from somewhere else today. You have an army of fellow soldiers at your side. Have you ever come to this building, folks, and looked around and thought, "This is my army. These people here are my fellow soldiers. We are fighting a war together"? I don't think we think of that very often. Maybe we don't think in those terms because we want to consider ourselves peace-loving people, but we need to understand that it's a spiritual warfare we are fighting, but it is a war. Those soldiers at your side, they are not perfect. They need your help just as much as you need theirs. But you can draw from their faith and their hope and their love. When you feel down, they can encourage you. When you stumble, they can help lift you up, and you can do the same for them. We fight a war in which our objective is to destroy a spiritual enemy, Satan. We fight a war in which our objective is to find people who have sided with him and not destroy them, but rather get them to join our side. That's the way we fight this war. Several of the well-worn hymns that we have sung in years past center on the image of Christians as soldiers in war. We still sing some of them, although I think generally those hymns may be less popular today than they used to be. We might do well to revisit the words of some of those hymns, to remember that we are soldiers fighting together, because that can give us a fresh appreciation for the New Testament passages that highlight our responsibilities to one another. In Hebrews 3 and verse 13, for example, God says to us, encourage one another day after day, as long as it is still called today, so that none of you will be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. What is that, if not an instruction for us to help one another in battle, to encourage one another so that no one gets victimized by the enemy, so that no one loses heart in the fight? Or this, Galatians chapter 6, verse 1. In Galatians 6, verse 1, Paul writes, brethren, even if any of you is caught in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, each one looking to yourself so that you too will not be tempted. Bear one another's burdens and thereby fulfill the law of Christ. What is that but an instruction, a call for us to help each other in battle? When I see a comrade who is struggling, who has fallen, I do my best to help him up. We bear one another's burdens. The things that are too heavy to carry alone, we carry together. That is a large part of what we are about as a congregation of God's people, helping one another bear the burdens. James chapter 5 and verse 16 says, confess your faults to one another and pray for one another so that you may be healed. What is that if not a call to help one another in battle, to share our struggles and our weaknesses with each other? We are not good at that. We are not inclined to do that, and I understand. But when we are weak, God tells us to reach out to our fellow soldiers for help and to seek their encouragement and their prayer on our behalf. And He encourages us in the same passage in saying this to be willing to extend that help and to offer that prayer, to be willing listeners and encouragers toward each other. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and verse 11 says, therefore encourage one another and build up one another. And then in verse 14, Paul writes, we urge you, brethren, admonish the unruly, encourage the faint-hearted, help the weak, be patient with everyone. What are those instructions if not a call for us to help one another in battle? These and many other things. We might be able to see those instructions with fresh eyes if we think of them as instructions given to soldiers who are going to battle, because that is exactly what we are every day. David succeeded through God's strength. And part of the strength that God supplied was the help of His people. And so will we. The victory is guaranteed. We studied the book of Revelation not very long ago, and that is the driving message of that book, that the victory of God over His enemies is assured. What we have to do is simply make sure that we are fighting on the winning side. Let's fight the good fight together. As we think this morning about the things our shepherds are going to say, the work of this congregation together that they're going to call to mind, let's think of it as our warring together against our spiritual enemy. We're going to sing a song in just a minute. We usually call it the song of invitation or encouragement. And here's what I hope that invitation or encouragement will motivate you to do. If you are not a child of God, we want you to realize that there is a spiritual war going on. Paul describes it as one involving powers that we do not see, and yet whose influence we feel and experience every single day. Right now, you are on the losing side in that war. You may not feel like it. You may be saying to yourself, I don't remember enlisting in any kind of spiritual war, but because you have sinned against God, you're in slavery to Satan because of it. The war is not against you, but you are a casualty in it. Today, our invitation to you is to enlist in God's army, to accept the offer of redemption in Jesus Christ.